Please turn to Genesis chapter 11. We began our series last time. This is going to be the ABC of scattering, part 2. Well, last time we began our series by examining migrations, big thing in the news right now. But we were thinking about the migrations of the families of Adam and Eve, of Cain, and of Noah. And we started doing this with the intent of trying to determine whether or not there are any lessons in those migrations, lessons for us in God's true church in the 21st century. We finished last time in the first half. We read half of Genesis chapter 11 and verse 4, and that, with the sons of Noah and their wives, we call them Noahites. We call them Noahites, having just arrived on the plain of Shinar. And there on the plain of Shinar, they had keenly stated their intention to start building a city and a tower. So let's read chapter 11 and verse 4 again. And they said, "Go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven." And then in the second part of it, they said, we'll get to that in a minute. We saw that although the Lord had commanded these early peoples to get out there and to repopulate the whole world, this project, this city and tower project, was not a temporary sojourn. And the fact that the Noahites were building a city proves that they intended to stay at Shinar for good, permanently. So now we go into the second half of verse 4, and they said, "And let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth." Now God had told them to scatter themselves in order to repopulate the whole earth. But here we see they're refusing. They refused, they flatly disobeyed the Lord's instruction. You can imagine them saying something like, all of this nomadic nonsense and being scattered across the face of the whole earth. Perhaps they felt that it was too much of a long-term effort for them. As well as being vain, and we'll see this as we go along, their intent was actually also very selfish. It was all for their own short-term satisfaction, and it was all for their own generation. That's all they seemed to care about at that time. Whereas God's plan, the scattering of the people throughout the world, was intended to benefit every generation and all of the future generations. It doesn't really say so anywhere, but if you think about the fact that, and if it's true that Shem and Ham and Japheth and their families were all there with the basis of all of the different races, there is some possibility, because everybody has different ideas, different preferences of what climate they like to be in. You go down, we've been down into Zambia with incredibly high temperatures, and it's like water off a duck's back to them. They're quite happy with it. I go down there, I melt. I can hardly stand up because of the heat. And all I'm saying is you've got all of those, you've got the beginnings of all of those races all in China, and if they stayed there, just maybe they'd be uncomfortable, you know, that a lot of them would be uncomfortable there if they didn't spread out. Just a thought, again, it's not really recorded, but something that came to mind. But in their travels thus far, these Noahites had stumbled across this plain of Shinar. And it was likely a very nice place. It was probably something like the Cowichan Valley. It was down there, we believe, between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. It was likely a very choice, fertile area, likely covered in lush alluvial soil that would have been left behind by the deluge. There's a good possibility and probability that they were egged on by Satan the devil, using Nimrod as his pawn. And being egged on by Satan the devil, they may have made these vain claims to the effect of, look what God has provided for us right here. This must be our final destination. This must be the destination intended for us by God. If we settle here and build our city right here in this wonderfully productive place, we're going to flourish, and eventually we're going to earn a name for ourselves, as it says here. A name for ourselves, a name to be respected and looked up to. They'll call us the Shinarites, the first people who came forth from the ark. And if we build ourselves this grand tower, that'll bring us even more fame and honour and respect forever in the future. And you can imagine Nimrod saying, again egged on by Satan, isn't this much more attractive? Isn't this a better alternative than continuing to be scattered abroad across the face of the whole earth with all of that going forth and bringing forth? What can we learn from this, brethren? What can we learn from this? They used flawed logic. How often have any of us used flawed logic? I've heard it in the church over the years. How often have we had similar kind of ideas? How often have we tried to justify some unrighteous action, or in some cases just plain dumb actions, by thinking that we can put words into the mouth of God? I've heard things like, this must be God's will for me. I know that it's God's will for me because he didn't stop me from doing it. Didn't stop me from coming up with the idea. And I have to admit that I've done this myself. I don't know whether you have, but I know I look back and I've done it myself, so I cannot unrighteously judge others about it. But in this case, in this Shinar Bible case, Babel case, this was obviously out and out rebellion. This was blatant, in your face disobedience against the one who had saved Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth and their wives from drowning with all of the rest of the earth's population. This was blatant, in-your-face disobedience against the one who had blessed these people with the honour of being the very source of the continuation of the human race. Quite the honour. Just a reminder, thinking back, you don't have to go back there now, but back in chapter 10, we read about Nimrod, and it said that he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. And the word before is translated from the Hebrew noun panim, P-A-N-I-Y-M, strong 6440. And it means, or it's often translated in the King James Version, as against or face. It's actually not translated in the King James Version. It's it's translated in the King James Version as before, but it can also mean against or face. And it can mean in the face of. And imagine Nimrod virtually looking at Yahweh and being hard-faced. When I was a naughty schoolboy, my mother used to call me hard-faced, you know. But as we might say in our modern way of talking, he was disrespectfully in your face against the Lord. He was so influenced by Satan, the devil, from what we understand. And perhaps in this way, Nimrod was a precursor or kind of a forerunner of the end time beast. Just as Satan beguiled Eve back in Genesis chapter 3, and just as Satan is still deceiving the whole world today, more and more in the whole world today, as we see by the news, like Warren said there, perhaps he put the thoughts in the minds of these Noahites to the effect of, this is Satan now, basically saying to these people through Nimrod, and again, this is a what if, a possibility. Oh, I know that God told you to do that, but I'm advising you to do this. Because it's so blatant what they did and what they said. Now, we don't know exactly what the space of time was between the Noahites' first thought, when they first thought of building the city and this tower, and the first cutting of the sod, or the first laying of the foundation stone. But it appears very much as though they did not waste any time, and they apparently gathered their tools and the materials, and they immediately got right to it. By the time we come to verse 5, by the time when the Lord came to view their project firsthand, they'd already started on the city and on the tower. Verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one. Now this is important. The people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Now this is very interesting, and has a strong application to God's church today. Here we see, and the Lord noted that the people were one, the people were unified, and that they had one single unified language. The literal translation of the Hebrew word language is lip. They had a single lip, if you will. But we know from what the Lord said is that their unity, their kind of unity, was the wrong kind of unity. It was not the right kind of loving, godly unity, as Jesus commands so often to his new covenant people. This was not unity under his auspices. It was not unity through his Holy Spirit. It was not unity through him and through God the Father. And we'll see more of this as we continue. The Lord knew that the carnal unity that these people had would eventually bring disaster, would soon bring disaster. But they knew, the Noahites knew, they knew very well that the Lord had clearly decreed that it was beneficial for all mankind. It was good. It was for the benefit of all mankind. It was good for their well-being, for the well-being of all mankind, not to be unified geographically in those early post-flood years. But rather, it was their job at that time to scatter themselves across the face of the whole world. And as we read in verse 4 there, the Noahite spokesman, likely Nimrod, and likely inspired by Satan, twisted the Lord's positive requirements for them to scatter into something that appeared to be negative and harmful to them. And the Lord said that if he allowed them to continue together in this wrong, unrighteous, vain, selfish type of unity, this godless unity under their own terms, then the result would be that absolutely nothing that they imagined to do would be restrained from them. Nothing. Nothing restrained. And if you really think about that, I don't think we can even imagine the possible ramifications. He'd already brought science and technology to a screeching halt with the flood, and now it was starting to roll again. I don't think we can imagine this unrestrained negative wrong unity, what that can do. And I'll talk about that again in a minute. So you wonder that if the Lord had not put a stop to it then, that it might have led to the end of the age coming on the world so much earlier, and obviously not in his time frame. You know, certainly God the Father has a time frame that he's got set for the end of the age. So the Lord certainly knew that immediate action was imperative in order to break up this wrong type of unity. So what did he do? Verse 7, he said, "Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language." And the Hebrew word is Safar, that's the lip. "Let's confound their lip, that they may not understand one another's lip," others Safar. It's kind of interesting this when it says "go to, let us go down," and we ask the question, who is he talking to? We can't be totally sure who the Lord was talking to here. We can ask ourselves, is it the same as back in Genesis 1:26? Was it the same? Was it the other member of the God family? Was it God the Father he was talking about, or was he talking to his angels or his archangels? We're not really told, but I personally believe that it was probably angels that he was talking to. And I say that mainly because by this time, about 100 years we believe after the flood, by this time it had become clear to the Father and to Yahweh that mankind had again become seriously polluted, and so much so that the perfect Father could not be around them. So certainly Yahweh would not ask God the Father to come down to earth with him, because it was already, or the people were already so polluted, and the Father cannot be around that kind of spiritual pollution. Okay, so how did they achieve the breakup of this, the people's flawed unity? And this verse 7 tells us right here that they confounded the people's language. What does that mean? What does that word confounded mean? The Hebrew verb for confounded is balal, B-A-L-A-L. Fits in with the word Babel in some respects. Balal, Strong's 1101. And it can also mean mingled or mixed or tempered or confused. And interestingly, it means faded away. So the Lord was able to confuse and mix up their language to the point that their unity, their flawed unity, very quickly faded away. It evaporated. That unity soon evaporated to a level that the Lord was willing to accept, and that was likely of the linguistic groups. So he didn't have everybody. So, he didn't have everybody speaking a different language, but from what we understand, he split them up into linguistic groups. And people have studied that and know that there are various blocks of languages. But what this shows here, and this is something that the older I get and the more that I study God's Word, it shows that the absolutely astonishing control that our Creator possesses over us. And according to His perfect will, He has this ultimate control over our minds, over our brains, and even over the speech and hearing and comprehension circuits in our brains. And it's just, you think about it, and it's absolutely amazing. Why does he pick certain people, and he says, and he opens our minds to the truth, where a spouse or a mum and dad or the children, and he says, no, I'm not calling them, I'm calling you. And what we saw, or what we've seen in the church, and Warren alluded to it there, back all of those years ago, when people when they rejected His truth, He said, okay, you reject my truth, I'm going to take it away from you. Same as He did with Saul, right? King Saul. It's an astonishing thing that He can switch on understanding, and when He wants to, and He's merciful and He's compassionate, but if we reject His truth, He'll turn it off. He'll take it away from us. We don't want that. So we can learn lessons from these things. And when I read this, and there's actually a parallel scripture to Hebrews 11, and it's in Acts chapter 2. Let's go there and take a look at it, because it's amazing what happened there. And it's kind of a converse situation where God, for His own purposes, temporarily reversed this situation for a comparatively few people. Acts chapter 2 and verse 4. And they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. Now when this was noised abroad, the multitude came together and were confounded. Is that word confounded again? Because that every man heard them speak in his own language. It's kind of cute, because all of this multitude were confounded because God temporarily unconfounded the speech and hearing and comprehension abilities that were between the apostles and themselves. Verse 7. And they were all amazed and marveled, saying one to another, behold, Are not all these which speak Galileans? And how hear we every man in our own tongue wherein we were born? Parthians and Medes and Elamites and the dwellers in Mesopotamia and in Judea and Cappadocia, in Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia in Egypt, and in the parts of Libya about Cyrene, and strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes, Cretes and Arabians, we do hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of God. Amazing that for that short time that God flipped it over and affected the minds and turned the language switch on them back to something that was absolutely astonishing there. We can get into, and I didn't write any of this down, but we can start thinking about what was that initial language. Was that initial language, we have no evidence that language, that pre-Babel single language, was carried through after Babel. What language did they speak before that? And we also get you thinking about the pure language that God is going to bring to us in the world tomorrow. That there's going to be a pure language that he's going to restore. That's a study in itself. Okay, let's get back to Babel. What was the result of the Lord confounding their language there? You think they were pretty rebellious, and we ask the question, did they immediately get together and start working on the development of foreign language phrase books or their equivalent or other translation methods? Well, they were so rebellious that you could imagine that they would do that. So you'd imagine that when perhaps the Lord, when he affected their brains, that he affected their brains perhaps in that way to prevent such ideas from hatching until much later, because those things did eventually become they did come about, but not obviously not for a long time afterwards. And these translation methods are continuing to be developed today by leaps and bounds. I have a couple of examples for you, and they really are starting to break down language barriers, the language barriers that were set up by the Lord approximately 4,200 years ago on the plain of Shinar. Just a couple of days ago, I had to correspond with a church member who lives in France. And by using an email, I typed my English words, what I had to say to this lady, into my email program. And then I right-clicked and I clicked on a link, and it gave me the opportunity to translate my English words into French before I sent them off. Right-click, translate this, comes up with another page, and then bang, it's all in French. And I was able, almost instantaneous, and a pretty good translation. Not a bad translation at all. And she was able to receive that in a split second like that. Going back a couple of years, back in 1986, our family was living in Ottawa at the time, and we took the opportunity to go into question period in the House of Commons there in the federal government buildings in Ottawa. Now, I don't know what the breakdown is, but some of the MPs are French speaking, and some of the MPs, and for our American friends out there, we're talking MPs, we're not talking about military police, we're talking about members of parliament. And some of them are French speaking and some of them are English speaking. And the engineers, the engineers who work for the federal government, they came up with this really neat telephone system, and you can listen in on it. And they have live translators there, and they have a simultaneous live translation over headsets. And so if you've got an English speaking MP up there, and the French speaking MPs don't speak very good English, they can put a headset on and listen to the translation, and all the people up in the galleries can listen along, and whatever your language is, you can switch it to English or French, whatever you like, and you'll get it in your own language. Not a bad idea. But, and not bad technology really. But that, back in 1986, even back in those relatively low-tech days, say in comparison with now, there were other engineers who worked for the big telephone companies who were working on instantaneous electronic translation, in which you could talk over the phone in English to a French speaker, and that person, that French speaking person, would hear what you said in French and vice versa. Now, I have no idea, I haven't really followed up with it. I heard some follow-ups a couple of years after that, where literally, you know, the Japanese were doing the same thing, so Japanese to English and that. But I don't know how much that technology advanced. But even back then, when I heard that they were doing that, I thought that once that technology has been perfected or come to a certain level of perfection, that what God did back there on the plain of Shinar will have been overcome and overturned. Now, it's all according to his timing. But when that happens, I believe that something big is bound to happen as a result. And I believe that the restraints that the Lord put on the Noahites back then will be removed, and then things are going to really go forward. Seems like a minor thing, but it wasn't a minor thing back then. That one language was a big deal, and I believe that when Satan's world gets back to a single language, that it's going to be a big deal again. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I believe that it will probably or maybe contribute to the support, the worldwide worship of the beast and support for the beast. But anyway, whatever the case for the prophetic future, let's get back into the final verses here of Genesis 11 and the Babel narrative specifically, verse 8. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build a city. So they tried to resist that scattering, but the Lord did it anyway. It's kind of an interesting verse 8, because it almost looks as though it's been, that the two phrases there are back to front. In our way of thinking, we would logically think that the confusion of the languages would have come first, and of course the Noahites to leave off the building, and then the Lord would have scattered them. But he shows it the other way around here. That's a grammatic detail, it's probably not really important. But whatever the case, anyway, the important detail there is that the Lord ensured the scattering across the face of the earth continued. And so important was that fact that he repeats it again in the very next verse, verse 9. Therefore is the name of it called Babel. because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. The Lord scattered them. Please note, brethren, and never forget it, who did the scattering? It was the Lord who did the scattering. We could read through everything there and we can put the blame on the Noahite people. We can put the blame on Nimrod. We can put the blame on Satan. But only secondarily. And that's the same with all of the other major scatterings that are recorded in the Bible. The Lord initiated this one too. And I want you to think about this concept. I'm going to finish now, but I want you to think about it. I want you to apply it in your mind to the continuing scattering of God's church today. Again, those of us who are with the Worldwide Church of God, we might blame the Takachas. We might blame other Church of God leaders of the day. We might blame Satan. But again, only secondarily, because make no mistake, brethren, the Lord initiated that one too. And we'll dig into that thought some more next time in part 3.